This is UN and Africa from the United Nations in New York. I'm Deanne Penn. In this week's program, we talk to the team that's developed an award-winning device to educate people in Darfur about the dangers of unexploded landmines and bombs. And then we'll learn about the life-saving role of the UN Medical Service in South Sudan. But first, a new set of tools is needed to make UN peacekeeping fit for today's more dangerous and complex world. That's according to perhaps the most renowned of all former UN force commanders, Canadian Lieutenant General Roméo Dallaire, who was in charge of the Blue Helmets serving in Rwanda in 1994 during the genocide there. Matt Wells spoke to Lieutenant General Dallaire at the UN Peacekeeping Ministerial Conference held recently in Vancouver, Canada, and asked him how UN peacekeeping had changed since his time in Rwanda during the 1990s.
The fundamental change is the fact that we're facing, in conflicts, belligerents that don't play by any of the rules anymore. So the sort of moral high ground of the UN and peacekeepers has lost much of its effect because one or two of the belligerents that we face or ex-belligerents do not play by any of those rules. And so we're in imploding nations and failing states. These are not states against states. And so it's not classic warfare. It's not classic peacekeeping. Mandates are complicated. Ethical, moral dilemmas abound. And so we need a new set of tools. We got to re-equip the military, the police, the security forces to have far more depth, far more breadth in how they can bring solutions than simply the use of force or non-use of force.
So how does the UN and the troop contributing countries go about doing that? I mean, obviously this conference that we're speaking at now is one part of that puzzle in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, and in fact, probably one of the principal aims is that you're not only providing capabilities, but you're providing new competencies. And so what are the new competencies? What are the new threats? What are the new concerns in peacekeeping? And how are you facing them? And how are you getting ahead of the game versus simply throwing a whole bunch of troops out there and hoping that something will work because people will get tired of their presence or get tired of the conflict. I think we can be far more proactive and far more engaged by bringing new assets to it, like how to handle, to stop the recruitment of child soldiers. You get rid of child soldiers, you get rid of a massive amount of mobilization capability of the belligerents to sustain these conflicts. Well, that might be something that could be introduced, and we hope. In fact, my child soldier initiative at Dalhousie is very much ingrained in that new think.
Do you think that that peacekeeping has a kind of an image problem in a way that, you know, that not enough young people in the world, not enough women perhaps, think that it really has anything to do with them or that they can contribute?
I think simply throwing out thousands upon tens of thousands of troops in peacekeeping is not the solution. And on top of that, throwing them out with mandates that limit them to the point where their countries are even playing more limiting capabilities. I think that we're into an era where we need far more progressive, far more anticipating forces that can understand the problems and, in fact, participate in the solution than simply being present there and hopefully you're protecting somebody.
So in a nutshell, do radical changes need to be made to peacekeeping? Or tweaks?
Yeah, significant changes. Yeah. Brahimi brought in some, Responsibility to Protect brought in some, but we're in still another level that we've got to implement.
A project that aims to educate people in remote areas of Darfur about the dangers of explosive remnants of war has been awarded a UN Prize for Innovation and Creativity. The solar-powered risk education talking device will contain multiple pre-recorded audios, such as songs, interviews, and messages, and targets people who may not be able to read or who live in areas that lack electricity. The device looks kind of like a mobile phone and was developed by the Ordnance Disposal Office at the joint UN-African Union mission in Darfur, UNAMID. Setio Budi has been speaking to Jeffrey McMurdo and Abel Tesfai there. Mr. McMurdo began by explaining why the device is needed.
The project is the risk education talking device, and it's solar powered. It looks a bit like a mobile phone, and we're going to use it to raise awareness in Darfur about the dangers of explosive remnants of war. We'll be reaching out to vulnerable, remote groups of people
Abel, maybe you can tell us about this solar-powered risk education talking device.
So talking about risk education talking device is just a solar-powered audio talking device which has the ability to play multiple pre-recorded beats, song, drama, focus group discussion, or interviews. So it's particularly suitable for use of engaging with people who cannot read. In a remote area where there is no electricity, you just can't charge yourself using solar energy. The other aspect of the device is actually the message can be encrypted in different ways. So it has only purpose built for disseminating risk education message only. And it takes a SD card where regularly we could send different messages and update the community who are at risk in terms of understanding and trying to maintain safe behavior. So in general, contains a multiple sequential recorded risk education message in the form of songs, dramas, interview, focus group discussions. And the beauty with the device is its arrangement can break through the listener's tune out factor and ensures the message retention will be always with them.
How do you think this device will make difference in raising awareness about the dangers of explosive remnants of war?
For us, continuous improvement is something which we see seriously. So we start to think, how could we improve the way we deliver risk education? And parallelly as well, we have a problem, which is because of security conflict in some areas of Darfur. The mobile teams cannot access to different areas. And of course, the radio message which is delivered not always can be heard by everybody. Not always the radio coverage can cover deep remote fields. In addition to that, Darfur is a big area to cover with limited resources, quite difficult. These are the driving forces which we need to develop something within the same toolbox of risk education, but we need to add something which is supported through technology.
And when the project's over, we'll be able to go to the communities and get a sense of how it worked with them, how popular it was. Maybe what's the greatest hits of the risk education messages they like the most. One thing I like about this project is because we're going into maybe nomadic communities that are on the fringes of any settled areas where probably there isn't much modern technology. We'll be curious to see what kind of impact that has among them as well.
A team of doctors, nurses, and technicians plays a life-saving role in South Sudan, according to a senior Jordanian doctor in the UN peacekeeping mission there, UNMISS. The UNMISS medical team cares for around 17,000 military, police, and civilian staff across the country, as well as on occasion South Sudanese civilians. Major Zaidoun Al-Rawashde is a Jordanian doctor who has served in UN peacekeeping missions in four countries: Haiti, Liberia, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and now South Sudan. He's been speaking to Daniel Dickinson.
Actually, UN staff is the priority, but according to the condition of any national patient, we will get the approval from DMS and chief medical officer to treat him.
What are the main challenges for you working in a country like South Sudan where the infrastructure is so undeveloped?
There is few challenges. I'm telling about myself because I had previous experiences. The main challenge is the security. The security and safety, even when we are conducting medevac, when we are sending our flight to some area, we should get the FSA, flight security assurance, and sometimes it is delayed because of the person who should sign it, it will be away, or we will not be approaching him easily. Another thing is the endemic disease existing here, like cholera and malaria, okay, and some outbreaks of rare viruses which will happen here. The third thing, that the country is itself, it has no other medical facility to use. I mean, there is some cases needs further investigation like MRI, magnetic resonance image, or computerized tomography. So we cannot find it here. So we should send the patient to higher level outside the mission.
You have a great deal of experience working in the UN. You've worked here in South Sudan, also in Haiti, Liberia, and the Democratic Republic of the Congo. How's it been for you to adapt to what must be very different medical cultures in all those different places, and also amongst your many colleagues?
Mm-hmm. In general, working with UN, there is rule and regulation controlling your job in UN, and there is priorities for your job depending on what you are facing. But actually, each country has its own endemic diseases and different cultural background, you know, so you should keep in your mind that there is many cultures or many cultural differences between these two existing communities.
You've been listening to UN and Africa. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Deanne Penn.